Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we've got part two with Betsy Hooser Ittleby, co-founder of Tech Talent South. As you'll remember from last week, we ran through a lot of different conversations with Betsy. We talked a little bit about how she got started, from little idea to Tech Talent South. We talked about where she went to learn to code, talked about first hires, we talked about equity compensation. We really ran through an attractive hire, some of the attractive people that she's brought on board here recently. And as we were continuing to walk through that conversation, we were talking about the success of being in tier two marketplaces, which is a place I really wanted to start off our conversation today. So Betsy, thanks again for part one, and thanks for sticking around here for part two.
Thanks, William. Thanks for having me back.
So as I brutally just cut you off at the end of our last podcast, you were talking about Charlotte as a tier two city and Charlotte as a growth. And I don't know if you saw the news this morning or not, but there's an article in the CBJ that came out that said that Charlotte saw the largest net influx of millennials of any other city in the country. So we had 71,240 millennials move in while 60,000 moved out. So essentially a net gain of around 11,000 millennials, which was larger than any other city in the country. On top of that, when you look at a place like Charlotte, you know, we don't have a big engineering program here. We don't have a big tech program like you would in NC State or Duke or other universities across the country. How does that contribute to success and contribute to growth? Especially, you know, stay focused with me on Charlotte a little bit, and then we'll talk about it across the rest of the Southeast. But how does that contribute to your growth as Charlotte tries to become a kind of a startup fintech type hub?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was actually at the Charlotte Chamber Tech Summit yesterday, and it was a common theme that finding talent is a challenge. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of amazing companies, you know, really ramping up efforts. You know, we were right across the street from AvidXchange, so that's a perfect example. And you're right, UNC Charlotte is doing a great job. But if you just look to computer science departments for hires, you literally will never find enough people to fill your positions.
Yeah.
So you have to think outside of the box. And many of these companies are, and it's part of the reason, you know, in Charlotte being our primary pilot to grow our corporate arm of our business, that we are sort of looking to be a bit more demand focused from corporate. So one, on the student side, we'll be looking to build out classes that really revolve around stacks from local corporations. And then on the other side, we'll be working with specific corporations to build out training programs to either take new hires and gear them up for positions within the company, or, and what I think is more interesting, take people with the aptitude that are already within your walls. They know the corporate culture. They know your, you know, idiosyncrasies as a corporation, and give them the technical skills to do the jobs you need.
That's interesting. So, you know, when you read about coding schools, one of the success factors that they point to is, you know, the placement of coders after they finish the school. So you've essentially eliminated the placement issue there because they're already within the walls, and you know it's great for the employee and it's great for the employer, right? I mean, they both already understand what's going on.
That's right. And it's funny that you bring that up. If you'll allow me, I always like to talk about the placement thing for a minute because it's a little ironic considering what I'm doing. I think, you know, for a while there was this huge push to look at exactly how many people out of code school became developers. And that is really not the only option for someone learning the foundations of code, right? So we should all understand that, you know, becoming a client success manager, someone that has to make some minor changes in code, going into QA, being a product manager, there are a lot of roles for these people. And I personally take offense to it because if we only look at folks that have become developers, I'm not considered a success for Starter League, and I certainly hope they think I am.
Fair enough. No, that is an excellent point, a really good point. So how does Charlotte's growth or attempt at growth in the startup space, how does it help you over the course of the next 5 to 10 years? Is Charlotte one of the larger growth platforms for you, or are you looking more at expansion into new cities as your bigger growth platform? Or I'm assuming it's probably both, but talk about one or both of them if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's certainly a hybrid of the two, but I will say, Charlotte is our home. It's our headquarters. It's where I live. It's where Suzanne lives and Daryl lives. And we will be using this city as a pilot for success. And when I say that, one of the things we've really identified that we're very good at and that has really helped grow our business, both the student side and also corporate. Thus far, until Daryl started, all of our corporate was inbound, which is pretty incredible, organic. Wow. So we have really done a good job of building out an entire ecosystem around our programs. As you know, we run a lot of free events, things like we had 120 people at Tech Me Out to the ball game at the Knights the other week. That's something that we just do to create a community. And that community, one, fuels our student classes, but two, gives us corporate knows TTS. They know the students that we have. They get to mingle ahead of time. So we really will continue to build out the entire ecosystem, which will, essentially help both on our corporate side and student side. And that focus will be in Charlotte. And then we will use Charlotte as a template for other cities.
Okay. So let's move over to that recently. So we'll start off, you've recently announced that you've partnered with Cramer Mountain Growth Partners, which is a new venture-based fund based here in Charlotte. What pointed you that now is the right time to go down that path? And then I also want to take it from there into what's it going to enable you to do from here?
Yeah, I knew that I got to that point. I think I mentioned it in the last episode where I knew I needed to hire some really qualified people to help me take this to the next level. And, I'm humble enough to know, I haven't taken a company from X million to, 25 million in 4 years. Like, that's just not an experience I have. And there are people that have that experience, and I should be surrounding myself with those people.
Very, very good foresight.
And to be, to do that, I really knew that I would need to take on funding so that we could, hire the right people and not wait to hire, which we had been doing for so many years. So I looked at a lot of different options. We're a profitable company, so it was interesting to a lot of people. But what led me to really get excited about Cramer Mountain was a couple things. One, we met organically. So I have known Don for a very long time. And then Dave Jones, who I was mentioning on the last episode of Peak 10, he's one of my mentors. We were meeting and he just randomly told me, hey, you should meet this guy if you haven't yet. His name is Don Doctor. You've got to be kidding. I grew up in the town that he lives in. It's a very small town. So I met with Don for nothing more than mentorship. He was running CEO of CompuCom at the time and had built SMS, which was hub and spoke, similar to TTS model. Just wanted to pick his brain on growth, et cetera, and of course, tapping the corporate markets. And it kind of just evolved from there and was a very natural fit. And I love the fact that they're here and they're involved. I craved more mentorship and they are really providing that. Chris Noe of Cramer Mountain is just unbelievably smart. So I've been very fortunate to have them, helping us with more strategy and, thinking about the next 5 years, not the next 5 days.
So what's it going to, it helps on a lot of levels from a strategy perspective, another brain to pick and bounce ideas off and stuff like that. And it's helped you with your two new hires. So you've got, capital to pay people where you don't really have to worry about it. Is it going to help you launch into new cities? Is it going to help you launch new platforms? What else will the venture allow you to do?
Yeah, it will certainly primarily be used to launch strategic. We will launch in new cities strategically, but even more than that, to ramp up Daryl's team quicker than we would have if we hadn't had this investment. And of course, for me, the money was part of it. But, you know, we're doing really well as a company. And the primary reason that I thought this was important was for, you know, the mentorship, the connections, the advice, all of those other factors that come with the right investment group.
How hard was it to give up equity as a profitable company? How long did it take you to get over that?
You know, it's an interesting question. So it actually wasn't hard because okay. We're shooting for a goal now that is, I'm honest, you know, the numbers that Adon and Chris are used to saying are kind of something that I'm not even used to looking at. So, you know, we're shooting for a bigger goal now. And, you know, I would be very happy if we get to that place. And of course, we're going to get there a lot faster. And I'm not going to, you know, I get to be a bit more strategic than I have been over the last few years, a little less in the weeds. And so I'm very excited about that change. So, you know, for the right people, it's not difficult.
Yeah, no, I bet. So, and I get it. We talked about Atlanta, Asheville, Charlotte, Raleigh. So you're in 11 cities. I think you said 6 states, maybe 4. How do you decide what city's next?
So, of course, now there's a lot more going into it. Yeah. We're really looking at a bunch of data points. The reality is when we started, it was, you know, connections, places we felt the most comfortable. I mean, it's very clear why Atlanta, Charlotte, and Raleigh made sense to us. You know, I had lived in Raleigh for years and I went to school up there. Charlotte was, you know, always my number one city, and Atlanta being Richard's. So after that, we really looked at a variety of things. So we looked at everything from the average demographic in the city, you know, the ages, et cetera, to there was almost a funky, cool vibe. So you think of a city like New Orleans, there are a lot of really, really smart people that were, you know, liberal arts majors. They've been doing their thing for a few years, and then they're getting ready to start a family, and they realize, you know, I really need to get a big kid job. So this is a great opportunity for them to do that. So a variety of different things. We also look at, you know, with newer markets, we look at like corporate, how many headquarters there are there. We look at competition, all the normal factors. We look at what area we would be in. So we really like to be in an area like a Plaza Midwood or a Noda or an Uptown. So a creative district. Mm-hmm. And then early, we launched landing pages for each city. This was our testing model. We would build out our own little landing pages, spend $100 on a Google ad campaign, and see where we got the most clicks.
Hey, it worked, right?
It was incredibly scientific, William.
Yeah. Hey, whatever. It got you to where you are today, and we won't complain about where you are, right?
That's right.
So your industry's, you know, I think it's been highlighted over the course of the last month. There's been some companies that are, you know, in the process of shutting down. And I mean, that happens with any industry, right? Especially as it goes through a growth stage, you see consolidation. Some are successful, some aren't. What's allowed you to be successful versus some of the others?
It's funny that you asked that. I really think my biggest advantage was that I didn't have money early on. I didn't know to, like I mentioned last episode, I didn't know I should be taking on funding. We were growing just fine, and we were making money, and we were doing good things. And, you know, that forced us to stay very nimble and to focus on, you know, the quality and recognize we're a service-based industry. You know, we really believe if, you know, a class isn't going to be profitable, I'm not really sure why we would run that class. So there was a big shift and a lot of folks, you know, spending a lot of money on a lot of advertising and building out big spaces that are beautiful and their brands were incredible. But that only takes you so far. So I think we were very fortunate that we didn't take on funding earlier on, or I think we may be in a similar position.
So you use we a lot, and you've got a co-founder, Richard. How active is he in the business?
He's not in the business at all anymore. Yeah. He actually just started a web development company in Atlanta, but I use we because we are still a we. It is very much, you know, a long-term thing when you take on a partner and you go through the things that we've been through together. We're still good friends. You know, you come to a point in a business where if you didn't know where this was going, it may not be the best fit for you. And it wasn't for him, and he knew he wanted to build out an Atlanta-only business, and he's doing an amazing job. I mean, they're growing rapidly, too, and it's so great because, of course, it touches CTS, so we get to, you know, do some meetups together and still, you know, work together on a lighter level, but he's no longer in the day-to-day, and I miss him.
Yeah. So can you talk about that for a second? I mean, how did you know it was time, and how did the conversation develop that, you know what, this is the point in time that it's now's the right time to make the break?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was certainly hard for both of us, but, you know, one, he lives in Atlanta and I'm in Charlotte, and we had started to make all of our strategic hires here. We were really growing, you know, at rapid pace in Charlotte. So there was a little bit of a tension there. And it was just, you know, he didn't want to move to Charlotte. But more than that, it just wasn't something he was passionate about anymore. And he was humble enough to admit that. And, you know, we just decided early on, like, it'll be harder later. So let's just go ahead and make a clean break now. So it's been, you know, it's been interesting, but I am so happy that we remain friends and, you know, he's the person I can call and talk about TTS at any time because he absolutely gets it. Yeah. In a very different way than anyone else ever will. but, you know, I am his biggest supporter. I mean, his company, Tyrannosaurus Tech, like I said, is killing it and they're doing amazing things. And he just didn't want to be TTS wasn't the best fit for him anymore. And I respect him for making that decision.
Betsy, you've sold your, so we're 10 years down the road, or we're 20 years down the road. Just play along with me for a few minutes. You've sold TTS. It was a great ride, very successful, and you've got another idea that you want to execute on. Do you go the co-founder route, or do you go it alone this time?
Oh my gosh, that's an excellent question. Well, I will say I would never have done it alone with TTS. I needed the emotional support even more than anything else. Without Richard, I wouldn't have been able to handle the first few years. He was just so important. It's very hard to start a business like TTS. I think I would be okay starting a business on my own, but candidly, I don't know that I would want to. And now I have this network of amazing people, people I know I work well with. My gut is if I was starting another business 10 years down the road, I'm starting it with someone that already has touched TTS in some capacity or even little idea.
Wow. Your conversation is starting to spin a lot of different thoughts. So I'll try to keep it in the same direction. So 3 years from now, your co-first hire comes up with a concept, Zach,
yep,
and spins out and starts his own business. What's your first thought?
Oh, is he leaving TTS for
this?
He's
leaving TTS to start his own business.
You know, I actually can really speak to this. So when I was referencing the first two hires, so Laura, the other, she's part-time with us now because she is building out her own company. And I'm sure she would say her greatest supporter.
Okay.
I am so excited for what she's doing at Soul Addict and, you know, want her to be successful. You don't join a startup not wanting that experience yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was Zach, man, I don't want to think about that, but I also, he knows that I would be so supportive of that decision and help in any way I possibly could. I believe in good karma and, you know, I think that Laura's doing amazing things, and I hope she leaves us and is full-time at her company because that's the harder path.
It's the ultimate downside of hiring great people, right?
That's right.
There's the potential that they take their greatness and do something great themselves.
Although we do have a running joke, Zach and I and Charlotte, that I blacklisted him from all other companies because every time I would meet with someone, I'd be like, no, don't hire Zach.
That's funny. So speaking of surrounding yourself with great people, I mean, you've mentioned on a number of occasions your mentors and advisors. First, do you have a board?
So we're actually in the process of adding a few members. We did form a board with this recent investment. Right now it is the three of us, and we are adding another person from the team and then a fifth outside board member.
Okay.
So we're starting to think about who makes the most sense for that role.
So lots of people have good ideas, and sometimes their good ideas were good ideas for them, and sometimes their good ideas are good ideas for you. How do you, as you know, as Betsy, you know, the person driving the ship, how do you sort through the great ideas and which ones to apply for TTS and which ones to kind of let fall by the wayside?
Yeah, that's a great question and one that I hope that all entrepreneurs think about. So I think when we started, you know, a very smart person would tell me something and I'd immediately think I need to do exactly what they said, right? But you have to keep in perspective that you know your company and your customer better than anyone. So one thing I would say is find a few people within a similar industry that really understand your issues. So the Baggianos have been so unbelievably helpful for me. You know, they built a lead training company, which is very similar to TTS model. And so they understand most of the situations that we encounter and they can walk me through those. So I'm grateful to Chris and John all the time and very happy we actually are right down the hall from them. So I get to pick their brains on a regular basis. But, you know, I know that early on, a great person in Charlotte who an awesome, very smart guy advised me to sell for a couple $100,000 and I didn't do it. And I'm so happy I didn't, but I understand why he thought I should. But I'm glad that I really did stick to my guns and say, we're going to be bigger than this. I know we can be bigger than this. So you have to know when your gut is more important than other people's advice.
Yeah. Well, gosh knows. I mean, somebody tells do you go home and cry when somebody tells you that you should sell your, you know, your baby for a couple $100,000, or did you just kind of brush it off immediately and say, I know better than that?
Well, this was early, so it wouldn't have been a terrible experience. But no, I think I knew, and I also knew, you know, from you have to look at your personal situation, and I knew that, well, that would be great for myself and my husband. It wouldn't be life-changing, and I was willing to take that gamble. I knew, I always think, will I look back and regret this? Is this enough of something that, you know, I'll always, you know, be sad that I didn't take it? And I knew even if TTS went south and I lost the opportunity to pocket a few $100,000 that I wouldn't necessarily care.
Yeah.
I was confident that I could build something else or get a great job after this. So I think you have to look at yourself and decide, you know, does this make sense for my life?
Yeah, no, it's a great insight. So let's, you know, we're coming up on that 25-minute mark. So let's start to wrap up and just probably one more last question for you. So we'll go back. Charlotte's in this initiative of trying to become a fintech hub, or probably at bare minimum, a place where startups like you can thrive. As a founder who's created success, I mean, again, we'll go back as a female founder in a male-dominated industry in a small town, small city like Charlotte and all the other headwinds, that's created success in the early days of this initiative. What would you like to see in Charlotte that doesn't or didn't exist at the time that you were getting started?
Yeah, that's a great question. I certainly would have loved some sort of pairing of mentors once you hit a certain stage. I felt like there are a lot of people operating in the startup scene in Charlotte, but there are not a lot of folks that, you know, I know are over $1 million in revenue or what have you that I could use as either peer mentors or, you know, other folks that have been there and done that. If that there was a bit of an orchestrated movement to take some of those people that had already gotten to a certain threshold and put them in one place, I would love that. I built that organically for myself. I mean, I really appreciate all time I spend with John West of Ad Shoppers. He's both a friend and, you know, is an advisor to me in a way. I mean, he's a few years ahead of me.
Yeah.
But I think if that was created by external forces in some way, that would be incredibly helpful. And of course, none of us have the time to do it, which I recognize is the issue.
Yeah, fair enough. So, I don't know if it's a huge startup, but maybe a listener will get on the effort.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, cool. Now this has been, I've really enjoyed it. I mean, you know, obviously we've met a few times and had lunch as well. And I've known a good bit of your story, but I've learned a lot. Gosh knows I can't wish you anything but the best of success. And it seems like you're well on your path to creating it. So thanks again for carving out some time for us today and kind of sharing your story with our listeners. I really appreciate it, Betsy.
Thank you, William. I really had fun.
That's a great way to wrap up an interview. Again, I thought Betsy did a fantastic job. She's created a great company here in Charlotte, something for us all to be proud of, and certainly something for us to continue to watch over the course of the next couple of quarters and well into the future as she continues to navigate the tech space, the coding space here locally and then across the Southeast and probably even beyond. So great interview, great person. If you see her out and about, be sure to tell her what a great job she did. Next week, we've got another two-part interview with Jami Nesralla from Venture for America. She's our local Venture for America representative, if you will, that helps the program develop, recruit talent to Charlotte and everything else. A fantastic program that's bringing extraordinarily talented students out of top-notch universities, students that are interested in the startup space, bringing them right here to Charlotte, putting them into startup companies and letting them be part of that startup growth so that they can live and learn the process. So hopefully after their two-year internship through Venture for America and through the startup that they're with, they can spin out and start their own startup. And once again, hopefully that is here within Charlotte. So many things to learn next week about what's happening through Venture for America, what it is, and what their outlook is for Charlotte and how we develop that going forward. So please tune in next week for another great interview. Thanks for listening to the Charlotte Angel Connection. William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates also does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments herein described may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interest may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, 51A under the Company Act or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interest. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.